You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me, once again, a fairly frequent guest on this show, not as frequent as I would like to have him, but this is the reality of time, and really pleased to have John Rubino with us. He runs the popular financial website, dollarcollapse.com, and actually it was an article that I picked up with Dollar Collapse that prompted me to pick up the phone and see if we could get John on today's show. The article that John wrote there and talked about was U.S. interest rates are spiking again. Why this is a huge deal. All right, John, why is this a huge deal?
Hey, Jay. Well, low interest rates, artificially low interest rates, cause people to behave in ways that don't make any sense in an environment of normal interest rates. And that's what we're headed for now is normal rates after a decade of unnaturally low rates. So to be specific, it caused us to buy a lot of houses at prices that really don't make any sense with mortgages now at 5%. Just this week, mortgage rates went to 5% on a 30-year fixed versus 3.5% to 4% for most of the last 5 or 6 years. So house prices were bid up by people using extremely cheap money to buy houses. And now those house prices don't make any sense, and sales are plunging. And a lot of formerly hot markets like Manhattan's home sales are crashing, and Seattle's are falling, and the Bay Area in general is weak. So we're seeing this big part of the economy roll over. The same kind of thing is happening in auto sales right now, where we had a lot of people were calling it an auto bubble over the last few years, where auto companies had access to extremely cheap financing, and that enabled them to offer 0% loans to people buying new cars. Mm-hmm. So you have these auto mortgages becoming popular, where people would lock themselves in for 7 years on a new car at 0%, thinking they got a great deal. But really, they're locked into a depreciating asset. Mm-hmm. And pretty much everybody who could do that has done it. So now car sales are starting to roll over. Ford just 28 minutes ago announced that their most recent month sales were down 11% year over year. So you got these two big industries tipping into recession because interest rates have gone up to the point where their business models no longer work. And that is, it's a very big deal for the economy overall, because the most leveraged part of the economy are the ones that go first. In other words, the leveraged assets get harder and harder to buy in an interest rate rising cycle. And that's usually the canary in the coal mine. That's the thing that that scares people into pulling back in other aspects of their lives, and it slows down the overall economy. And so we could be seeing that right now. We could be looking at the beginning of the end of this expansion. And you know what? Not a moment too soon. This is the longest expansion ever. It's going on 10 years now. And it took equity prices to record levels based on basically any valuation measure you want to use. We're in bubble levels in equities. It took bond prices until just very recently to record, bubblicious levels. And it took a lot of the rest of the economy to places where we wouldn't normally go except in an environment of unnaturally easy money. So the question becomes, what happens now? Can we handle a recession after we've taken on, the federal government has doubled its debts, the corporate sector has record debts, the consumer sector has record credit card debt, record student loan debt, and very high mortgage debt, plus all those auto loans. So we're in a place where a typical recession, in other words, a few quarters of negative growth, no big deal, from a macro standpoint, is systemically dangerous for us just because so many people are so highly leveraged. So this time around could be very, very different. You could see air pockets under stocks. You could see the housing related companies and the mortgage related companies and the auto companies really taking a hit, which would probably pull down the bulletproof FANG tech stocks. So it could be very serious. What happens now, and we're seeing the very beginning of it right now. And then, for your listeners, of course, the important question is, what does this mean for gold? and typically, in the business cycle, gold tends to start moving at the end of the central bank tightening process. In other words, when the central bank is still raising interest rates, that's not great for something people see as an inflation hedge like gold. But as soon as the Fed stops tightening and starts easing, gold historically tends to take off. And if the economy is really slowing right now, which the macro numbers don't say that yet, but these sectors that we just talked about imply that it will be soon, then the Fed is going to have to, first of all, you know, delay its next rate increase, then it's going to have to cancel it, then it's going to have to go to cutting rates and reintroduce QE. You know, all of that is coming, but now we have a sense of the timing, and it could be in 2019, which is great for gold and great for mining stocks.
Mm-hmm. John, a couple of other areas, you hinted on the debt that the government has taken on. I think I saw somewhere that back before we went off the gold standard back in 1970, a 1% rise in the interest rate added something like $3.7 billion to the federal deficit. With a $22 trillion deficit, a 1% rise increases it by $220 billion. Or if we were to raise interest rates were to go up 4%, that'd be almost $1 trillion more a year in interest expense for the U.S. government. I mean, where is the financing going to come to pay for those, to pay for Uncle Sam's deficit spending?
Oh, they'll make it up out of thin air, of course, the way they always do. So, and which they can keep doing as long as we'll take those dollars as something that has value. So the question for governments becomes, at what point do people figure out that the supply of these backed by nothing, fake monopoly money currencies, until the supply of them is becoming so high that their value isn't going to be maintained going forward. And the way that process works is that people start to figure out that the government's borrowing too much money and money is too easy and they've just got a lot of money coming in for no more work than they used to do. So they take that money and they convert it to real stuff. In other words, they get rid of their dollars and euros and yen by buying farmland or precious metals or oil wells or rental houses. And the price of those things goes up in the local currency terms, which we think of as inflation, but it's really people losing faith in the currency. Historically, that's been the process that ends extremely long credit expansions. And we're kind of sort of seeing it now, except the government and most people don't recognize it as such. You know, when stocks go to record levels that bear no relation to earnings, that's people losing faith in the currency and being willing to pay up to get out of the currency and into stocks. Same thing with house prices, record level house prices. You know, fine art is at record levels. Trophy real estate like London penthouses until very recently, they were at record levels. So we've seen a lot of this process already happen, but people don't recognize it as a vote of no confidence in the currency. When it spreads to the rest of the economy, in other words, when price increases become widespread and wages start to spike, which we started to see lately with Amazon going to an across-the-board $15 minimum wage, that's when it becomes real to more and more people. And at some point, you get a critical mass of people coming to that conclusion. Mm-hmm. And then inflation hedges, real stuff, start to spike. And then it's game over. Governments don't any longer have a currency that allows them to run unlimited deficits, and they have to live within their means, which is a huge crisis. You know, look at Europe, where they tried to impose austerity. which is to say cut deficits, don't eliminate them, but just cut them down a little bit, and you've got political chaos there. So that's going to happen all over the world pretty soon. And it's going to happen here as much as anywhere else. So, you know, get ready for political and economic chaos as soon as we have to balance the budget.
Oh, boy. I mean, I don't know. That's unthinkable to balance the budget. I mean, what kind of interest rates would we have to clear the market, John, right now? If only Americans were paying for the treasuries, you know, who knows what the, I mean, here's another issue I want to ask you about. China and Russia, countries that are not necessarily terribly keen about the United States these days, and we had been depending on the kindness of strangers, as it was said, for many decades now. The U.S. has run huge deficits, but the Japanese, the Chinese, other countries would lend us, would buy treasuries. Do you see anything, you know, so the question in my mind is, why would the Chinese want to keep supporting the United States when we use the financing to build up our military to keep them from having control of their sea lanes in the South China Sea? Why would our adversaries want to keep buying treasuries? Or maybe they don't want to, but why are they continuing to do so? And do you see any potential for that to change?
Well, in a frenemy relationship, you have a lot of cross currents, right? Mm-hmm. And China is a perfect example of that. Yeah, we're kind of sort of geopolitical rivals. In other words, mm-hmm. we want to maintain dominance in their region, and they want to be the regional superpower. So naturally, we bump up against each other. But as far as financing goes, it's in their interest, or it has been in their interest all along, to lend us the money with which we buy their stuff, right? That's how they make a profit. It's vendor financing, to use the business term for it. Yeah. But that can only go on for so long, because eventually they build up so many IOUs from us that it becomes a huge risk for them. In other words, they make money selling us stuff, but they incur a risk that the treasury bonds that they have gotten in return for the stuff they're sending us lose value when we eventually have to devalue our currency. Mm-hmm. So they've got that staring at them out there. And they've been hedging their bets by buying gold very aggressively, because in a world where the dollar is devalued, gold soars. Because gold is basically the old kind of money that we run back to when newfangled money turns out not to work after all, you know, and that's clearly happening with the world's fiat currencies. So China has these mixed motivations right now. They want us to keep buying their stuff. And to do that, they have to keep lending us money, and they have to keep accumulating treasury bonds. But that builds up a risk for them, and it allows us to finance a military that is causing them trouble. So they're basically taking the long view. They're building up gold year after year, decade after decade, knowing that that will help them when the time comes. They're building up their military. They're building a navy that numerically is going to be bigger than ours in the not too distant future, knowing that in the inevitable conflict where the control of the South China Sea, for instance, is finally decided, the bigger their buildup, the more time they have to do it, the better their chances are of kicking us out of that place. So they're looking a decade or two decades down the road and taking steps now to prepare for what they see as coming. And we're just behaving completely cluelessly. You know, we're borrowing money from China year after year after year, allowing them to buy the gold and build up the military that will cause us trouble at some point in the future. You know, we're behaving really cluelessly, and they're behaving fairly intelligently, at least in those areas. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they feel any real time sensitivity here. Like they don't feel any pressure to get this over with this year, because they know that the trends are in their favor.
Mm-hmm. Long term.
Yeah, long term. A decade from now, if current trends continue, they will be in better shape than they are today. They'll have a bigger navy capable of causing us more trouble over there. They'll have more gold than they do now, which protects their currency from our devaluation. So they'll be okay. So they're not really that worried about those things. Mm-hmm. And we should be much more worried than we are about our current trends.
Yeah. Well, we've been the top dog now for a number of generations, and I guess a lot of people sort of think that we can keep doing what we've been doing, printing money, living irresponsibly beyond our means, and we can just stay on top forever. But, of course, nobody stays on top forever. John, I want to ask you then what has happened. The Shanghai Free Trade Zone, which has been set up, as I understand it, allows now, for example, Russia or Iran or some of these countries that are not all that friendly to the United States to be able to sell their oil to China in exchange for their Chinese currency, which then can be used to exchange for gold in the Shanghai Free Trade Zones. Is that your understanding? And to what extent do you think that may be a mechanism that undermines the dollar longer term?
Longer term is the operative word here, because it's happening. Mm-hmm. And it's progressing, this departure and diversification away from the dollar on the part of a lot of countries. But it's a long-term process, because right now the dollar is still the only game in town as far as a major reserve asset goes. You don't want to load up on rubles, and you probably don't want to load up on yuan if you're a central bank, right? Because you still want to own a lot of dollars, just because we're still relatively safe. But over time, as more and more countries figure out that they can trade bilaterally with their own currency and with the currency of their trade partner, they don't need dollars. So over time, the share of dollars in central bank reserves will go down. And it has been going down. It's gone from, 70-80% down to 50-60% mm-hmm. now, depending on the central bank. And that's going to continue.
All right,
until
John.
30% or 40%, they don't need us anymore.
Right. At some point, that will be the case. Well, a lot more to talk to you about. I mean, for sure, one of the issues, I think, with raising rates that we didn't get to talk about because we're just about out of time here, has to do with the emerging markets and their borrowing of dollars, and also as rates rise. So what they have to come up with in terms of their own currency to buy dollars to repay their debt. Is that something you think, with about 30 seconds, is that something you think that could trigger the next a financial crisis globally?
Yeah, this other stuff was kind of long-term that we talked about. The emerging market crisis is immediate. It's here now, and a lot of those countries are functionally bankrupt. Turkey and maybe Pakistan, who just asked for an IMF bailout, and Argentina, who got the biggest bailout in IMF history, and Venezuela. A lot of these countries are bankrupt, and they owe the money they owe to Western banks, which means it's coming home.
All right, we're going to have to leave it go at that. John, thank you so much for your – always a pleasure having you on to talk about the big picture and the smaller picture, but you pull things together as well as anybody we have, so I want to thank you very much for being with us once again. Well, folks, that is all the time we have for this week. Next week, Keith Weiner will be with me to discuss the negative interest rates and how that has set one of the strongest fiat currencies in the world, namely the Swiss franc, towards its self-destruction. Can you believe it? The Swiss franc would be self-destructing. Well, at least that's what Keith Weiner has to say. Also, Brian Groves will be with us of Genesis Metals. And if we're lucky, we'll have Michael Oliver with us as well once again. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.